Welcome to the Science Podcast. It's February 17th, 2012. I'm Carrie Klein, and right now I'm bringing you something a little special. This is the first of a host of podcasts being posted from the 2012 AAAS annual meeting in Vancouver, beautiful British Columbia, Canada. For the next 3 days, Sarah Crespi and I will be sharing with you the latest and the greatest findings being presented here. It's a common belief that technology and modernization together are contributing to the deterioration of traditional cultures and languages, but the speakers in a session this morning argue that harnessing 21st century digital tools may help to sustain and protect languages that are being spoken by fewer and fewer people. These include the languages spoken in remote areas of Siberia, Mongolia, Papua New Guinea, and India, as well as the Native American languages of North America. Meg Norrie, of Algonquin descent, prefers to use her Anishinaabe name.
Magnit Indigenikas, Minnesota and Donjibwa. I'm originally from Minnesota, Anishinaabe Indaw. I teach right now at the University of Michigan. I'm director of the Comprehensive Studies Program, which is a program that supports diversity of our students. So I think that it's an example of how everything blends together.
And then can you just tell me what your presentation was all about this morning, the initiatives that you're working on out there in Michigan?
It was really about how we preserve diversity of languages through technology. So in particular, the state of Michigan has 12 federally recognized nations, and the students who come to us at our institution, some of them have, as a heritage background, Anishinaabemowin. But then some of the students are just interested in the language of their state. The state name is Anishinaabe. They start thinking about the place, how to better understand the place. And we've found that technology is an amazingly powerful way to connect both our students in our classes, but then all the people who are their relatives and the other people in communities across the U.S. and Canada.
What are the best ways using technology that you've found to share your language and spread your language?
I think that one lesson I've learned here at the conference is that people underestimate the simple things. So just the fact that I can do a lesson in the morning with the instructors I work with, and even just we can run through it and easily make corrections, edit it, and then email it out to 30 other people we know who teach in the state, to not underestimate the value and power of the really simple things like that, like the fact that you can email, the fact that we were able to Twitter the almost 3,000 people on our Facebook site that we would be on here with David Harrison today was good, because it really validates for all our students that our language matters, that people are thinking about it. So it's sometimes the really simple things for us that are really powerful, but there are other things, programs and infrastructure that people are building that are also very useful too.
I'm David Harrison. I'm a linguist specializing in endangered languages, and I teach at Swarthmore College, and I also work with the National Geographic Society.
And can you tell me what you presented on this morning?
Our entire panel presented on the idea that language extinction is happening, but it's not inevitable. And there is a counter movement called language revitalization that has really become a grassroots movement that's picking up steam and using many new technologies, everything from Twitter to text messaging to social media to YouTube, to really expand the voice and the reach of some of the world's smaller languages.
And there's an interesting initiative that you're undertaking to sort of make an electronic or a digital dictionary of some of these languages. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
I've been working with a number of communities, and with support from National Geographic, we've built talking dictionaries for 8 languages with another 5 or 6 currently in production. And this is a way to record the sounds, since language is primarily spoken, not written. For example, we've done a talking dictionary for the Tsleil-Waututh language, which is a Native American language spoken in Oregon with just a handful of fluent speakers. And our fluent speaker, Bud Lane, had the patience to sit down and record 14,000 words in the language, which is an amazing resource for the community. It will never replace fluent speakers, but it is already being used in their language revitalization classes.
Well, these both are really fantastic projects, and I hope they'll really raise a lot of awareness about these languages. So now, we just finished up a Science Live, a live chat. We were talking about dying languages. If I can ask both of you, what do you think were some of the more interesting questions that came up?
I think it's always interesting when people ask us, why do you do what you do, or shouldn't we just have one language? Wouldn't that be simpler? And you know, you can get worn down by having to defend it. But you also start thinking about, well, what if everyone was alike? I mean, it's really at that core sense of everyone's right to diversity and identity. It goes across language to culture, and it has such big implications for the human race to be a healthy, vibrant community on Earth. I think that just many, many disciplines, you know, so when I saw people asking, what do I do? How do I help? Or some people saying, why do you do it? Shouldn't we just have one? It was fun to see that they were all looking at those comments together and thinking through those issues and thinking about their world in that way, I guess.
And David, what about you?
Well, I'm just grateful to be at the AAAS. I think it's wonderful that we are included along with interplanetary research and microbiology, because language is part of our ecosystem. It's part of our biology. It's part of our environment. And the key to sustainability and survival in all of the places that humans live really depends on their ability to sustain linguistic diversity. And so it's great that we're being included along with biodiversity as an issue, a problem that people should pay attention to and care about.
Were there any questions asked today that particularly challenged you, that either you hadn't thought of or which you kind of learned something about in answering them?
There was one fascinating question, and I love giving lectures or online chats because people will always surprise you. You think you've heard all the questions, but you haven't. Someone said, what is the future of languages? Will languages change faster in the future than they are changing now? I think people have this impression that technology accelerates the pace of language evolution, and that may be true. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question, and that's why I'm fascinated by it. I've often wondered, since languages are constantly changing, that's the hallmark of a living language, do they change perhaps at different rates? For example, does a very small language like Matagar, a language that I've helped to build the talking dictionary for, which has 500 speakers, does that mean that Matagar has the potential to change more quickly because of the dense social network? I'm fascinated by those questions. We don't know what drives the pace of linguistic change. We just know that it happens. No one leads or controls it. It's an emergent effect. And it's fascinating to think, where will languages go in the future? Where will Ojibwe go in the future? Where will English go in the future? We don't know.
I think that, to me, thinking about technology and the way we see the world around us, it's interesting because I think we do often in the questions that we saw, particularly after the panel, not as much on the chat, but some of the questions relate so much to technology as if it's almost like sort of opposed, like now you're using something that's sort of dissonant. And I don't know that I see it that way at all. I think a lot of our oldest stories teach us about the sort of, I mean, electricity is what makes your heart beat when you study that, and electricity would be what would sort of reverberate if I sang across the bay, and electricity is what's going to get this sound out to other listeners. And so to me, I'm not feeling it as a dissonant thing at all, that you would just keep using that electricity in all its different forms to kind of achieve the same end. So I think that's one thing that came up in questions today. Being here made me think about it very differently than I had before, because I always just thought it was sort of seamless and natural. But people are often surprised you're using technology. And it's like, you know, why would I not do that?
And that was one thing that I really enjoyed about the entire session this morning, about the two of you and the third speaker who was there, that technology was the common link amongst the three of you. And to say that languages can be saved or it can be protected with technology is not necessarily a threat. So David Harrison and Meg Noori, thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Kumugwach.
But we're not done yet. Meg Noori is going to serenade us with the traditional Anishinaabe folk song. Tell us about what you're about to sing us.
Okay, so the short history of this song is one that we recently wrote for some naming ceremonies. We've had a number of people in the community who want to give their relatives names. We actually had a woman who was in her 80s and had never had the opportunity to name her daughter, who's now in her 50s. And so we had a big naming ceremony, and they wanted to be able to dance outside and be able to kind of thank the world around us for still being here and going through all of the change that the world goes through, just the way we do. So I think being at a conference that is about language diversity and change, and even how as many people here are thinking about climate change, it seemed like one that would be an appropriate song for that. So it's a song that basically what it says is Shkakamekwe is the word we use for Earth, that being that gives us life. So we say Shkakamekwe, and that's what we mean. And we say, you know us when we sing, and we understand you when we sing. So that's all the song says.
Great. Let's hear it.
Shkakamekwe giken mana, Shkakamekwe giken mana, Shkakamekwe giken mana, giken magona pinagamoyang, giken magona pinagamoyang.
Thanks for listening to The Science Podcast. I'm Carrie Klein. Check back on iTunes, our RSS feed, or the Science website for more podcasts from the meeting.